Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, this is CJSF 90.1 FM.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
The central insight of quantum physics, our North Star, is a recognition that nothing exists in isolation. Everything is fundamentally interconnected. Embracing this understanding invites us to reconsider long-held assumptions and reconfigure our institutions to better reflect the world and how it operates honestly. One area demanding urgent reconsideration is our collective reliance on undifferentiated economic growth. Currently, most economic policies treat all growth as inherently positive, neglecting to distinguish between activities that benefit society and the planet and those that cause harm. This singular focus on the quantity rather than the quality of economic expansion overlooks its broader impacts on ecological and social well-being. What if we measured economic success differently? Imagine prioritizing clean energy, fair labor, and innovations that enhance living standards while respecting the planet's ecological limits. Such a shift promises not just new policy, but a profound change in how we live and relate to one another and the Earth. Today, we'll explore this vital shift in economic thinking with our guests, Faye Cox and John Fullerton. John Fullerton is the founder and president of Capital Institute, a nonprofit organization dedicated to transforming finance and economics to serve life and the planet through regenerative economics. In 2001, he walked away from a two-decade career at J.P. Morgan, where he served as managing director and oversaw capital markets, derivatives, and investment businesses globally, including acting as chief investment officer for Lab Morgan LLC. Now, besides his work in Capital Institute, Fullerton is a member of the Club of Rome and currently serves on the board of directors of the Savory Institute, dedicated to regenerating the world's grasslands. He's the author of several books, including Regenerative Economics, Revolutionary Thinking for a World in Crisis. Faye Cox is the founder of Our Books Press, a small independent publisher that creates short books, each designed to be read in about an hour. Our Books is dedicated to share essential knowledge that fosters positive change in the world. Cox has earned a master's degree in English literature from the University of Oxford, and also has training in expressive arts, therapy, and coaching. Faye Cox and John Fullerton are the co-collaborators of the first Our Books publication, Regenerative Economics, Creating Conditions for Health and Abundance on a Living Planet. So please join us for the next hour as we explore a reliable compass for transforming our economy with regenerative principles, featuring our guests, Faye Cox and John Fullerton. I'm speaking with Faye and John from their homes by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Fay, John, welcome.
Thank you. It is so good to be here, Justine.
What a pleasure, Justine. Nice to be with you.
Thank you so much for being here and for the work that you're doing. And I would love to start off asking you for your aha experience of when your perspective changed. I know, Fay, you had a change in your perspective and awareness when you met Willis Harmon. Can you tell us about how that changed your perspective?
Yes, I remember it so well. It was, I landed at a Rebirth of Business conference in Vancouver. I actually was headed there for an art therapy conference and wound up at the Rebirth of Business conference, which was profound turning in my life. And I had started to intuit that things were much more deeply related than our either or thinking before I heard Willis. And I had begun to think about how our economy and our ecology are deeply related, and was thinking we need to really rethink business. And then when Willis began to speak, I'll just never forget it. I actually began to cry. There was such a recognition of this is such deep truth, and it's what we need so much now. So I had the great fortune of meeting with Willis 5 times, and he had this incredible way of seeding people with their own work. And I actually trace our books back to that time with Willis and that vision of we need an educational devotion to taking this to a broad awakening.
He was surely a seeder of lots of different projects, and we also were very much entangled with Willis and all of his ideas. Thank you so much. And John, you were in finance and Wall Street for 2 decades. Wow, what was your aha that said, wait a minute, this may not be where I belong?
Well, I've read Willis's work, but I never had the privilege of meeting him, so I'm jealous, Fay, because his book is extraordinary. But I... You know, if you want to go back to the first aha, it was while I was still, in the belly of the beast. I had just been promoted to run the global commodities and commodity derivatives business at J.P. Morgan, and so I was a young hotshot, and I was off to Asia to meet the team, wave the flag, meet the clients, and. Just trying to think, I would have been 35 years old, and I had 2 young children at home, 1 2 and 1 newborn. And it turned out the day I had to travel was a Sunday that happened to be Father's Day. And when you have a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old, you don't tend to read the Sunday Times very often. And so I had the luxury of 12 hours of first class Singapore Air. And I had the Sunday Times on my lap, and I champagne, Mr. Big Shot, should be happy. And I was miserable because I was leaving my family on Father's Day. And so I looked down at the New York Times, started reading, and there was an article in the right hand column about the corruption in the federal housing, low income housing system. So it sort of metaphorically spoke to me. There's lots of problems in the world. And then on the left-hand column, there was a big puff piece about Walter Annenberg. And he made the cover of the New York Times because he had just decided to give away his fortune to a few educational institutions, basically. And I read the article, and, he was celebrated the way we do in our culture. It's, he's our hero. You make a fortune and then give it away and get your name on the building. And I read this article, and I got to the end of it where they interviewed the smallest gift was, I think it was $50 million to a secondary school, probably where he went. And it was the largest gift by an order of magnitude to any secondary school. And they interviewed the president or the principal, and he was polite and generous in his words, but he basically said, I have no idea what I'm going to do with $50 million. And so it hit me that I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be Walter Annenberg and work my whole life on something that I wasn't that passionate about at that point. And yet there were all these problems in the world, and I need to go make a fortune in order to work on problems, which is what I really cared about. So in many ways, I quit my career that day, even though it took me four more years to walk out the door.
Well, let's talk about regenerative economics, because that you started pursuing something very innovative. And how are economics, what's a guide that we're presently using, our what they call the GDP of economics, and how it's being reported to us, and what we're using as criteria to say, oh, we're in a healthy position or not. Yeah. So tell us about that.
So, you know, you're right. We have a kind of a very general metric, the gross domestic product, which is it's a metric designed to measure the total production in a domestic economy. And it's useful because generally speaking, it's like so many things. There are lots of partial truths, not, as Faye said earlier, not binaries. And the truth is that when this metric of GDP is growing, it generally means that companies are doing well and expanding, which generally means there's more employment opportunities, which generally means people have better, more prosperity than in a recession when companies are laying people off. But as you said in your opening, there's no qualitative factors in GDP. And in fact, a man named Kuznets, who invented the GDP, right when he invented it, he warned us not to use it as a measure of well-being because it has nothing to do with genuine well-being. And people going back to, you know, Robert Kennedy have been warning us that it's a bad metric. And there's a whole sort of micro industry of folks developing alternative measures to GDP and have been for decades. And so I'm not at all convinced. I mean, I think it's important that we have better measures, but the transformation that is awaiting us is way bigger than measuring different things. And it goes back to your very opening comment about quantum physics. One of the startling discoveries I made in my search was that our economics, the theory of economics that we run the world on, it's called neoclassical economics, is literally built on a foundation of Newtonian physics. And so we are, the assumption is that individuals are separate parts, and that the economy is a mechanistic machine, going back to that phrase, clockwork universe. And that's literally how it's understood. And even the critics of contemporary economics, Ray Dalio, the big hedge fund manager, has a video out, and he starts it out by saying the economy is a machine. And so we literally, whether we're you know, on the left or the right, and or supportive or critical of economic policies, the metaphor for the economy is a machine to be optimized, to be controlled and optimized for money. And in fact, if the economy is understood as a human economy made up of human beings, which are living systems, living organisms, not machines, you end up with a very different approach than simply alternative measures. You end up with the language that Faye selected for the subtitle of our book together, creating conditions for health as opposed to optimizing for anything. So we think in the regenerative paradigm, we think about creating conditions for health, for vitality. And if we create conditions like a farmer does, like a good farmer does, with healthy soil and healthy inputs, then good things happen because life is a miracle and good things happen in this living systems process. And we're not like, this is not like inventing some new theory. Like there's a proof of concept called life on this planet. In fact, there's a proof of concept called life in the universe. So it's a pretty good model to work from.
Exactly. That just reminds me, you mentioned the subtitle of the book, and I just want to say, and that was the book, Regenerative Economics, Creating Conditions for Health and Abundance on a Living Planet. So it just reminds me that the two of you have really demonstrated that kind of connection and collaboration, because you collaborated with this book. And Faye, I'd just love for you to say something about that collaboration and how that was for you.
Well, it was a big thing we took on. And the way we met was this beautiful synchronicity. I was on John's regenerative economics course, and he began to speak about Bernard Lyotard, and I had worked with Bernard, and I wrote in the chat.
Wasn't he the one who really established the euro in Europe? Yes. You know, I mean, really a finance guy, but very broad in his perspective. And our listeners can look him up on our website because we've interviewed him several times. So,
yeah, profound understanding of money and how it's created, for sure. Anyway, we had this lovely recognition, and John and I share at least a two-decade lineage of teachers, and you have hosted all of them, Justine. So it's great fun for us to be here. Sharing this lineage has been a tremendous part of our collaboration, and I took on learning from John his distillation of these universal principles based in how the universe works. I mean, we couldn't have a more faithful witness than that. And what we're learning now at the leading edge of science, since 2022, three Nobel winners proved that from nanoparticles to galaxies billions of miles away, it's all connected in a very creative, evolving, connected universe. So diving into how John had distilled these principles was tremendous learning for me and an honor to, and hard work. I mean, there is a reason for the quotation that it takes a long time to write a short word. I'm in a lovely time at a lake in British Columbia, and I love going out on the dock in the morning because there are always new spider webs. And they are so beautiful in the morning sun. And, you know, a web of life is such a lovely image for this new way of seeing and being. But one thing I love to do is very gently, I touch the edge of the web. It's the small touch, but the whole web moves. And this is what happens as we really wake up to interrelationship and interconnection. What we do matters, whether it's small or big. But when we're seeing from wholeness and seeing the web and caring about the web and caring for the whole, our behavior is going to change. We're going to do things differently. And it's not something we can prescribe, but it's also waking up to who we are. But, you know, I'd like to just, one of the pieces that I think I could read from the book in response to your question about regenerative economics is, and the economy not being a machine, the economy is not complicated like a machine we build. It's complex, like our bodies, like our families, like government. Complexity requires an entirely different understanding and approach that can be described this way. From seeing parts to perceiving patterns, from focusing on objects to looking at relationships, from measuring things to mapping motions and connections, and from caring about quantity above all to valuing quality first. And so what I love about this is making it practical and accessible to how we change our actions by what we're perceiving. So yes, the collaboration was several years of back and forth and some tug of wars and coming to a deeper understanding.
We didn't kill each other.
No, right. That is exactly. So true. And I think what came forward is so much stronger for that collaboration.
Yes, I'm sure. I want to go back to also talking about living systems. One does not think of the economy as a living system. That's a new concept. So, John, can you go into that, how that is a living, truly living system?
So that's the only thing that's profound in my work. Everything follows from that. And if one accepts that, to me, the rest becomes self-evident. And so you're right to focus on that. And it is radical to think that way. And, you know, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, which is that the economics profession built its credibility on this urge to create a science, a legitimate science. And in the 19th century, when neoclassical economics was really developed, sort of simultaneously in France and in the United Kingdom, Newton was, this is my theory, I'm not a research scholar, but my theory is that Newton was the hero, he was the science guy, and the political, what used to be called political economy, it was really a philosophy. They wanted to turn that philosophy into a legitimate science so they could have the same stature as Newton. That's my theory. And there's reasons to believe that that was the case. And there's lots of writings that these early economists, you know, that I found that made it very clear that that was their agenda, is to establish this as a science. And that meant it need to be quantified, because science had to be quantified. But at the same time, Darwin had come along, but the science of ecology hadn't really been created yet. So, I don't really blame them. Science meant physics at that time. It's remarkable that they chose to avoid the laws of thermodynamics when they developed their economics. It was sort of a convenient oversight, because had they studied the laws of thermodynamics, they might have stumbled into the problem that Georgescu Rogen later discovered, which is that, you know, the law of entropy is going to be a problem for this exponential growth thing on a finite planet. And I haven't found any explanation for why they overlooked that, because that happened right around the same time they were developing these theories. But to get back to your point, I can't explain why people, and I'm not the first to think of an economy as a living system. I've more taken that idea to its more logical extension. But Jane Jacobs wrote a book called The Nature of Economies. And in it, she was talking about an economy as a living system. And my argument for it is that the human economy, first of all, it's a human economy. We're talking about a human economy here. Human economies are, by definition, are clearly living systems. And so the argument in favor is that it's a system devised by humans, made up of human beings and our tools and technologies. And so if it's not a living system, then it's a mechanistic system or a machine. But, there's there's no logic in that it is a machine, because it's the expression of our human activities and needs and wants. You know, it's just a natural expression of our livingness. And in contrast with the machines we build, the technologies we build, these are things we make. And kind of getting to the passage that Fay read, one of the real ahas for me was learning with Alan Savory that we confuse the things that are complicated with the things that are complex. And he likes to simplify it into anything we make is complicated. So this is complicated, a cell phone. Artificial intelligence is complicated. A bridge is complicated. And since the beginning of the scientific revolution and our reductionist method to figure out complicated things, from putting a man on the moon to, you know, figuring out a better way to create a medicine, we use our reductionist left brain logic, analytical thinking to do that. And we've become brilliant at that. But it turns out that not every problem we're trying to solve is complicated. There's a profound difference between complexity, which gets back to your opening quote on quantum entanglement, and what's complicated. And a simple way to think about the difference is that anything we make is complicated, but anything we try to manage is complex. So we manage our own health, we manage our families, we manage our communities, we manage companies. So Apple Computer makes a complicated product, but Apple Computer, the company, is complex. The United Nations is complex, and I would argue the economy is complex. And so we need to use a different science.
I understand, and I don't want to cut you off because I want to go more into this. But no, it's not that at all. I just want to remind our listeners that I'm here with John Fullerton and Fay Cox, who have collaborated with the first Our Book publication called Regenerative Economics: Creating Conditions for Health and Abundance on a Living Planet. And if you want to sponsor this book or receive a copy of it, you can go to the website, ourbooks.com, and that's spelled H-O-U-R, ourbooks.com. And for John, if you want to know more about his work, and he is the author of his own book, Regenerative Economics, Revolutionary Thinking for a World in Crisis. And to learn more about his work, you can go to his nonprofit organization, capitalinstitute.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Clarity International, publisher of the book Get Clarity, The Lights On Guide to Manifesting Success in Life and Work. GetClarity.com. New Dimensions and our quarter hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. NewDimensions.org.
So I'm here with John and Fay, and I'm thinking that the old system is based on competition, that it's very competitive in its functioning. And so what you're talking about is something that is just opening up. It's an emergence rather than using money and resources to extract things. You're talking about exchanging things. And so I'd love for you to talk, either one of you, to say something about the difference between extracting and exchanging, because it seems to me this is kind of the key to regenerative economics.
Oh, yeah, please. Let me say one thing, and then I'll let you answer the more specific question. But just to put some context around it, What I would say, and the reason I said earlier, is that if one accepts that the economy is a living system, the rest becomes a